just identifies as trans.
Okay.
Has not taken testosterone, has not taken hormones, not taken hormone suppressants,
mm-hmm.
has done nothing that may alter her ability to compete.
Yeah.
But just identifies as trans. I should say he, given that's how they identify. Mm-hmm. But has not actually done anything medically to change how they transition.
Okay.
So there is a trans person competing, and it's neither of the ones that people are in an uproar about.
Right. Well, people aren't generally concerned about trans men, though, for one. One of the other analyses that I've read was when they were talking about the Algerian woman, some of the people who've been competing against her said that her punch feels different, and that's one of the reasons why they started complaining. They basically said it doesn't feel like a normal woman's punch. But the critique against that I've heard from a couple sources is people say the exact same thing about Mike Tyson. They say that when Mike Tyson truly punches you, it doesn't feel like a person. It feels like mechanical equipment.
Mm-hmm.
It is completely different. And he's been tested multiple times, and he's very much against doping and juicing. He is very much big on just training hard and training often. But they've described his punch as being like a mechanical piston. He's just naturally born, something to do with the nature of how his bones are shaped or his muscles are hinged or something. There is something about Mike Tyson. I mean, the same thing like when they started looking into why Phelps was such a good swimmer, and they realized he's got abnormally long arms and abnormally short legs, and most swimmers are actually arm heavy and short on the legs anyway. And they were just saying that to do with the proportions of his body, he was basically a human dolphin. They've said very similar things about Mike Tyson, just something to do with his frame. And it could just be that, you know, this woman from Algeria just happens to be a woman whose body developed in a manner that makes her punch like a piston. It can happen. It, you know, you don't have to fall back on accusations of doping, although we don't know one way or another whether or not there was doping. We just know for sure that this is not a trans woman. So if that's the accusation, that there's an abnormal advantage because this individual went through a male puberty and transitioned later in life, that is false. And that has been confirmed. If there has been some kind of doping, then it's either the very high-tech kind that can escape detection, or it's the kind that was stopped a long time ago so it could get out of her system in time for the Olympics. And I'm not saying that that's what I think is happening. I'm just covering our bases here.
Mm-hmm.
There's no evidence of any of that. If the only evidence we have at this point in time is that this is just a woman with a punch like a piston. But same thing is said about Mike Tyson. There have been a few other people. What's his name? Butter something. There's an obese boxer. Who's known for having a punch like a piston. Like, he normally punches you twice and then that's it, but he's just really bad at landing his hits.
I mean, it must be unbelievably frustrating to be really good at a sport and have someone say, wow, you must be a man. Like, no woman could possibly be this strong.
Yeah.
You must be a man.
I mean, the sports world has been on high alert since the last Olympics. So I can understand that people's bar of sensitivity, like that line to cross before they start getting suspicious, has been very much lowered. So I can kind of understand that, but it's the difference between, you know, being skeptical, and then they say, no, we tested it, trust us. And then you say, like, to me, when I first heard, I was like, ooh, that's sussy. And then other stuff came out saying, no, they double-checked, and, you know, it was confirmed. And I was like, oh, okay, well, this is just a woman with unnatural talent. That's, you know, great for her. And that's about it. So, I don't know. I think it's the difference between, you know, raising an eyebrow versus getting engaged to this degree.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's fair and reasonable to raise an eyebrow for a list of reasons, not just maybe this woman is actually trans, but it, you know, just this, maybe this woman is doping. Maybe there's a whole bunch of other things. Like you can take out your own blood, put it in a fridge, and inject it back in yourself, which gives you kind of a mild hypothermia, which actually improves performance.
We're not recommending anybody do
cold blood doping. Has been around for a long time. It's got a different name, but that's been around for a long time. It evades all detection, but that kind of thing can happen. Or they hyperoxygenate it. There's a bunch of things they can do, but. But
the Russians just ran fake testing centers.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, like,
fake the center.
It's fair to raise an eyebrow, but mm-hmm. if other agencies come along and also do testing and confirm that they couldn't find anything,
yeah.
then you say, well, okay, you know, it's fair to be skeptical, but it's also fair to drop it mm-hmm. once you get evidence.
Once there's evidence, and yeah. that's exactly it.
Yeah.
Now, one man that you think would have learned the lesson after having to pay over $100,000 in penalties, mm-hmm. is Lawrence Fox. Are you familiar with Lawrence Fox?
I know the name.
So he is one of the leaders of the right-wing party in Britain called, I think it's Reclaim or Reform, the Reform Party.
Okay.
He's been an actor in the past as well, avid commentator online. But a couple of years ago, or a year ago, he called a drag queen a paedophile.
Okay.
That drag queen sued him.
Got it.
Because mm-hmm. you can't just go around accusing people of being paedophiles. Mm-hmm. It's just... It's defamation. It is textbook defaming someone's character.
And, oh, you can't make direct statements like that anyway. Like, you could say, you could legally get away with, even though it's a little bit crass, saying, this person reminds me of...
Yeah, in my opinion, Lawrence Fox is an idiot.
Now,
am I saying that he is? No, I'm saying that is my opinion of it.
Well, there's also no criminal act against
him. Yeah, no, you can be called an idiot.
Yeah.
Now, Lawrence Fox tweeted, and I quote directly here, it's a shot of the drag queens that performed during the opening ceremony. It's worth mentioning. Mm. Drag queens performed in the opening ceremony in LA. Drag queens performed in the opening ceremony in Sydney. Mm-hmm. This is not the first. It is one of many occasions where countries have had drag queens performing in the opening ceremonies.
Mm-hmm.
But he tweeted, and I quote, no point in getting wound up when the child bleepers, I have bleeped
mm-hmm.
that,
mm-hmm.
want to wind you up. Just laugh at the deviant little pedos. Eternity is a bleep. And Nikki Doll, one of the people who performed, has now taken Lawrence Fox to court for defamation for referring to them as a paedophile.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same man that lost a lawsuit for defamation for referring to a different drag queen as a paedophile.
Right.
And Crystal said, quote, since you didn't learn the first time around when you called my friend Crystal Wilson a pedo, I'm going to show you that you don't get to write things like that about queer people for the fun of it and the misinformation of it and get away with it.
Yeah.
See you in court.
Yeah.
The court documentation has been filed. And obviously it's just the start of that process.
Mm-hmm.
But there seems to now be a bit of a wall where people are saying, look, you can't just keep saying this poor Algerian athlete is a trans woman over and over and over when it's factually incorrect.
Yeah.
You can't just look at drag queens at an Olympic opening ceremony and say, wow, that's like 10 paedophiles there. Because it's not accurate. It's not fair. It's defaming the characters.
Well, it's the difference. Like, if you know... I don't like when bad people get away with things or when people hide behind a political shield. Like, you can't accuse me of that. I am a name something about your demographic. And that does happen.
Yeah.
There are actual predators out there who get away with it because they hide behind something.
Yeah.
And this isn't some kind of like anti-DEI thing, because there are people who are just like, I mean, you get your Weinsteins of the world who just hide behind the fact that they're rich.
Hugh Edwards, the British TV personality.
Yeah, they're just rich, they're just powerful. Sometimes it is, you can't say that about me because I'm a woman, I'm black, I'm gay, whatever.
Yeah.
That does happen, but Jesse Smollett got away mm-hmm. with a whole bunch of weird things because of that. But like, if you have direct evidence that somebody is harmful, That is completely different from saying they are of this demographic, therefore I assume this about them.
Yeah, you file a police report.
Yeah.
You don't tweet it.
There are people who actually are predators who accuse other people of saying, you're only saying that about me because I am a what have you. I don't think that's fair for whole cases to get dismissed because of that, but I also think this is completely unfair as well. You are a drag queen, therefore you have intimate moments with people who are far too young. Like, if you have evidence, provide the evidence. If you don't, you're just making a harmful stereotype and you need to get off the stage.
Yeah, you are. There is a line in law.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Lawrence Fox has crossed it. Uh-huh. At least that is the allegation in the lawsuit.
Yeah.
All right. We will be moving on to more great discussions of crime and corruption just after this. But good news. I want to end on a bit of a good note because, you know, we don't often seem to cover a lot of good news. And that is about Cindy Nagamba. Mm-hmm. Now, she is playing for the Refugee Olympic team. And she is openly gay out of Cameroon. And we believe that Cindy, the boxer, is likely to win a gold medal. Not a gold medal. Is definitely going to medal.
Okay.
I don't know at time of recording if the match has happened yet. I'm not sure which medal. But, yeah.
I've always found the schedule openly gay hard to follow.
Refugee team contestant will definitely medal. So we are playing our next track. This is called Clowning Around by Energy Slime. It was giving you B-52 vibes.
Yeah, some of their stuff. You played a few tracks from them, and some of it was like, this is early 80s, like, fun time surf rock.
Synth rock.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll look back to this after.
Shop.
welcome back to Canquee, home of Canada's Queer Media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And we want to talk about the about GLAAD. The people may be aware of them as the Gays and Lesbians Against Defamation.
Gay and Lesbian Association Against
That's
Defamation.
That's the one. Yeah. That is the one. What are you aware of with GLAAD?
Oh, I mean, I brought this to your attention initially, and then you looked into detail, and then you started finding things that I didn't know about. But yeah, the basic accusation is that there has been a high-level gross misappropriation of funds. Not necessarily in terms of, like, theft or anything. It's not like millions are going out the back door. It's that money is being spent on all sorts of things that do not impact the deliverables of the not-for-profit, but do impact the lifestyle of the top-level executives for the organization. That feels like a very polite way of putting it.
Yeah.
Basically, they're spending lavishly on themselves. And they're, at the same time, there are also accusations of them being fiscally very tight-fisted when it comes to the other employees who are not executives, that people are being sort of fiscally punished for overspending on the most minor things. Like getting a box of pens too much can get you sent to the corner with the dunce cap on. But then the various executives are taking limos everywhere. Like it's I'm really oversimplifying it, but I'm trying to do an introduction to the story.
Exactly. Well, essentially, the issue seems to be surrounding the executive director of GLAAD, Sarah Kate Ellis. Mm-hmm. Now, she started off, I think, in marketing with a magazine. And she, let's paint a bit of a picture here. In 2014, when she joined GLAAD, they were spending more money than they had. Mm-hmm. And it was at a point where they might seriously need to consider
closing up shop.
Yeah. No, it was not a great spot. They brought her in. She took them, I believe they were probably around 4 or 5 million, the size of the organization. It's now closer to 19 million. Mm-hmm. So since 2014, really turned that ship around. They've done really great work as an organization. They hold media and queer representation in media accountable. Mm. This involves meeting with executives at Netflix, yeah, Amazon, so on and so forth. They got $10 million from Jeff Bezos' wife.
Oh, wow.
Like, people, it's big business.
Historically, like, they sort of started off as the tip of the spearhead for class action lawsuits, where that you would have instances where, you know, corporations or political figures or celebrities or whatever. This is mostly in the 80s and 90s. This is kind, yeah, of where GLAAD got its origin story, where people would say things against the gay community that was just provably false,
It was specifically in the 80s with representation around AIDS.
Yes. And it was very expensive and difficult to actually go through the litigation process. So, mm-hmm, GLAAD was kind of set up as an organization to be the center point for those class action lawsuits. And over time, you know, a lot of those class action lawsuits kind of like faded back. There's not as many as there used to be, but there still are some. Like, GLAAD is still involved, mm-hmm, in that kind of like litigation, false accusation, bad media representation. Like, they're still involved in that world, but they do a lot more advocacy now, as some, yeah, of that other stuff has slowed down. Now they're a little bit more, you know, not so much we're going to sue you, but this is how you not get sued through things like style guides, language use, that kind of thing. They're a little bit more on the prevention side of things now than they are on the,
yeah,
actual.
Yeah, it's direct advocacy. It's, yeah, working with senior executives and, yeah, all of these things. Now, the challenge here is the GLAAD has accused the coverage by the Times of being misleading.
Uh-huh.
The Times, the New York Times itself, acknowledged pretty early in their coverage that GLAAD and the New York Times have had a bit of a spat,
yeah,
where GLAAD was accusing the New York Times of not being fair and equal in their representation of trans news stories, mm-hmm, specifically favoring on written quotes of anti-trans voices compared to written quotes from the trans perspective. They said that the New York Times is out of balance and being unfair.
But every media analysis group says that the New York Times is, like, heavy on the left.
We talked about it a few months ago when, like, 20,000 people signed a petition against the New York Times specifically over their trans coverage.
Hmm.
So the New York Times is coming from there. But I still believe what is being written here in this analysis. They literally brought the receipt.
Yes.
And one of the receipts I looked at referred to a black limousine sedan.
Yes.
To ferry the executive director of GLAAD around DC.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned this to me, and it's been really kind of pinpointed as one of the examples of largesse, one of the examples of just spending money, $3,000 for the day to essentially hire a car.
Yeah.
To go in and out of, I think, four buildings.
Yeah.
You know, that is obscene. But what if I told you one of those buildings was the White House?
Okay, yeah.
You know, I can understand, and this is really the theme of the issue here, I get it. I understand showing up to the White House as the head of a big national organization. You don't necessarily want to roll up in a yellow cab. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Like, it's not like...
But it could be an Uber.
The president and or, you know, the vice president and or the spouses of the president and vice president, they're not going to stand by the window waiting for company to arrive. Like, you're not going to your aunt's place, you know? And when you do arrive there and the Secret Service double checks the schedule to make sure that you are on the visitation list, they're not going to call up ahead and say, so-and-so is here.
You won't believe what they rolled up.
By the way, they're in a yellow cab. Like, nobody... Yeah. I don't know how much it matters.
It goes further. You know, she had $10,000 worth of work done to renovate her home because the Zoom background for meetings needs to be good. Now, does the Zoom background for a meeting with the wife of Jeff Bezos, who's going to give you $10 million, need to be respectable? Absolutely.
Find a bookshelf, set up your desk in front of that bookshelf, have books in the background.
Do you need to pay $10,000? No.
No.
And in many of these cases... Having worked at nowhere near as big as this, but a large charity, I know that you want to be looking at your overhead. You want to be accountable to your donors.
Yeah.
And the reason why this is particularly blown up is because the chief financial officer was ringing that bell. Ringing that bell, being like, not only are these expenses really out of hand, we're talking a chalet in the Swiss Alps, it's obscene. But also it's against GLAAD's own policies.
Yeah.
As the chief financial officer, she is saying over and over again, you are defying your own policies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the issue here is the CEO, the chief executive officer, or the executive director. The chief financial officer is saying, you're overspending.
Yeah.
The chief operational officer is saying, don't listen to the CFO. Don't listen to what she's saying.
Yeah.
Everything's fine. Everything's reasonable.
Uh-huh.
That may not be the case, because when you look at it, the details are quite damning.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like frequently... There is what might be a reasonable expense, reno for a Zoom call, travel to get to the White House, but it's taken so many steps further, so much more money being spent that it is no longer reasonable.
Usually it's something like, you know, we'll subsidize this up to $3,000. If you want to do a $4,000, $100,000 reno on your apartment, that's your business, we will cover $2,000.
Yeah.
You know, or... We'll cover 10% of something, or there's usually a limit. And the idea of just carte blanche, we're going to let you do whatever you want and pay for the whole thing. I mean, you're kind of, I mean, not to blame the victim, but you're kind of asking for it at that point in time.
Yeah.
Like, you got to put a limit on that stuff.
I can see the rock and the hard place that the board directors are in. This is a lady that took them from the edge of very difficult financial decisions to quadrupling their size.
Yeah.
Her pay is tied to hitting certain fundraising goals. She could make over $1 million. They say it's unlikely, but she would have to raise a huge amount for it to be possible. But it's not outside of the realm. You know, so there is a lot of money on the line. Now, their board of directors seems okay with this. Mm-hmm. They're on team executive director.
Okay.
Whether or not the people who are handing over their donations are as keen when X amount, you know, we're talking pennies. How many pennies per dollar is being spent on actual advocacy? And how many pennies per dollar is being spent so she can live with her family in Provincetown during the Big Bear Week and hang out with people? Like, where is the balance?
There's a lot of major organizations. Because I remember back in, like, the mid-90s, I think, the amount of money that was being donated to UNICEF took a nosedive when it was revealed how much of that money went to overhead and administration and not to actually helping children in the developing world. You can actually...
They've addressed all
They've addressed those. That, yeah. It's been a long time since then, but they have addressed a lot of that. A lot of the overhead's actually covered now by the United Nations, and the rest is sort of done in by the donations. But anyway, something like this can impact the donor class. And they'll be more unwilling to donate to them, and they'll say, well, what other organizations can you donate to? Mm-hmm. So there is a list of organizations out there that have the slimmest amount of overhead where you know the most amount of your dollars is actually going to go to whatever deliverable they are promising. And if you're not on that list, a lot of people will be, they'll still be willing to give you money, but they're not going to be giving you big money anymore. Mm-hmm. So there is a long-term impact of overindulging in this kind of thing in terms of its effect on the donor class.
Well, you have to decide, are you giving money to prevent defamation, and how much of that is going to support her lavish lifestyle?
Yeah.
And how much are you willing to pay for the executive director's
And is GLAAD the only game in town? Are there other organizations that do that? And the answer is yes, there are other organizations who work against defamation. So, you know, you're also in competition for those donated dollars. So it's there's an optics issue here that they really should have kept their eye on, because there is a long and rich history of good, by the way, very good, very effective non-for-profits and NGOs and other organizations of the type, basically crashing and burning because people discovered how much overhead is going to the executives.
I don't think this is being painted as, you know, maybe a bit of a hit job by the New York Times. Do I think that they were pleasantly surprised by the Schadenfreude? Absolutely. But I don't think it was a hit job. This is accountability. Yeah. This is transparency. And we are here for it.
All right. It is possible to hate someone and discover there's legitimate corruption.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You can have both.
Yeah, you can discover corruption with people you dislike.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to play out with Morgasm by Cora Flora, and we have lots more to cover next week, but we have run out of time today. I've been Luke Smith.
I've been Sebastian, and thank you for listening.
I surrender to my shame, to my shadow. I let go into the ocean of emotions and sensations. I get lost in the awe, found in the now. My pleasure is electric, comes in waves as I allow more.